Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly awful, or did they change history? Good evening, and welcome back to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago. We give each movie a score from memory and then re-watch the movie to see whether or not the movie is better or worse than we remembered. And then we score the movie again. With me, as ever, is my son Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
I'm good. I did wonder where that good evening came from. I didn't mean to do it quite like that.
I wish I'd done it longer.
Yeah. Well, there's always the next one.
There's always the benefit of hindsight.
And how has your week been? What exciting things would you like to share with our listeners this week?
It's been...
Okay, well, thanks very much for sharing all that with us. Fascinating insight into the life of Sam there. I agree completely. My week has been much the same. Very memorable. Yeah. We've had, I'm going to go straight to the emails. We've had an email today, not today, we've had an email for today's show. Interesting enough, doesn't ask us a question, but I thought it was a nice, email. So I'm just going to share an extract of the email, if that's okay. So we'll be back to questions next week, but this is just a nice email. And it comes from somebody in Palmyra, which is in upstate New York. Very famous place, quite an historical place, if you know your early American history. And and it says, I wanted to thank you for your podcast, which I found through a friend about 3 months ago. I enjoy listening to it on my drive into work, and it makes me nostalgic for all the films that I used to watch when I was a kid. By the way, my name is Sam, but to break the trend, I'm actually the father. Thank you very much for your podcast, and keep making the episodes. Your number one fan in America, Sam.
Wow, we have the same name.
You do, yeah. And I just thought that was I thought that was a nice email. We often get questions, but I thought it was a nice one. So thank you, Sam, in Palmyra, in upstate New York. Very famous place for those of you who know your early American history. So we went away, as we always do, and we have been watching the 2007 classic movie by Chris Weitz, The Golden Compass, which, from memory, I gave a 2. Why did you give it, Sam?
I gave it a 3.
So not a high score, is it?
No.
And people who have listened regularly to our podcast will know that we can be quite generous at times with some of the films that we watch. So this would suggest to us that, or to the listeners rather, this is not one that sits well with us, didn't linger long in the memory, or if it did, not necessarily for the right reasons.
Yeah.
I'll start with my traditional question, though. Has your score changed?
My score has, in fact, absolutely changed, yes.
Very interesting. That does ruin it, because if you say it hasn't, then we just sort of move on, really, don't we?
Yeah, just roll credits.
Roll credits. I'm going to kick off with my typical leading question.
Yep.
Are you ready for my first question? So let's just go through some facts about this movie. Are you ready?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so we're going to go through some movie facts. It's based on the novel Northern Lights by Philip Pullman.
Yeah.
Which is an excellent book. It's directed by Chris Weitz and written by Chris Weitz, who is presumably a pretty good writer and director. Do you know which other movie he famously wrote?
No, actually. I don't think I do.
I think you'll be surprised to discover that he wrote Rogue One.
Oh, wow. I love that film.
So, yeah, this is a guy that
controversial.
A guy that can write a script. I like that. I think it's probably the best of the modern Star Warses.
It is, yeah, absolutely.
It stars, deep breath, Nicole Kidman, Sam Elliott, Eva Green, Ian McKellen, Ian McShane, Freddie Highmore, Kathy Bates, Kristin Scott Thomas, Daniel Craig, the very good Dakota Blue Richards, nice cameo from Christopher Lee, Derek Jacobi, music by Alexandra Desplat, distributed by New Line Cinema. It has all of the ingredients to be a bona fide classic.
Yeah.
My question is, why isn't it?
I think the studio might have tried too hard. I think it was bogged down by all those big execs trying to take over. One of my notes actually, well, which is actually a bit of trivia, is that Chris Weitz had a terrible experience because New Line Cinema were constantly interfering with it.
Right.
Apparently his script was much slower pace, which I don't think is a good thing, but it built on the world a bit better, and I would have preferred to have seen I would have preferred to have seen his version of the film, as opposed to what the studio gave us. So I think it's definitely the studio's fault.
It does. It just if you if you list the cast, if you list everything about the movie, it should be amazing, and it's sort of okay. I mean, I know we're getting to the end of the podcast before we've even started. But it's sort of okay, but it never quite reaches the heights of everything that all of its ingredients.
Yeah.
It's like if you go to a Michelin-starred restaurant and you get served a meal with magnificent ingredients, but you just think, oh, I don't like the taste.
Yeah, true.
So talk me through your view on the cast, seeing as I started there. Tell me what you thought of the cast of the movie.
Well, when I was watching it, obviously these big names, actors and actresses, well, I don't know how they refer it now. Actors from all these big things that we've seen in the past or seen since. It felt like it should work. But I got this weird sort of sense that every actor in the film was either allowed one bad delivery and the rest was really good, or one good delivery and the rest was really bad. Because some of the line delivery was awful.
Yeah.
I couldn't sit through it. Most of it was just bland and terrible. It was just like, we're gonna get a golden compass. Okay.
Yeah, brilliant.
Like, could they not have, is there another take, or is that definitely the one you want to use? Try again, maybe.
Yeah,
it's all of these good actors delivering terrible lines.
Well, it's true. I mean,
badly as well.
I think Daniel Craig, for example, is a pretty decent actor. I'm not a huge Bond fan, but I've seen the modern Bond films, because who hasn't? I'm not a massive fan of those things. I think he's a decent enough actor. In this, he just comes across as quite wooden. At least that's what I found. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I think there's a lot of just decent actors who were wooden. I don't really know why it was. Maybe it was just, we're getting paid for it, let's just, you know, try not to do anything. Or if it was some sort of agreement, but it just didn't work for me.
Yeah, I agree. And I also found quite frustrating. I like Nicole Kidman. I think she's a really good actress and she's done some good things. But I found her breathy performance quite, I didn't know quite what to make of it, really.
Yeah, it kind of takes you out of it in a way.
Can I just briefly drift into anecdote mode for a moment? Would that be okay?
I have a bad anecdote too. That's not for the podcast.
Okay, I'm going to go into a podcast related anecdote. And this is going back many years when I was a student at university and part of my degree required me to do some acting, okay?
Uh-huh.
And I had this particular role and had been directed to do it in a particular way. Long story short, I kind of acted in a particular way and that's what I did. And it was supposed to be slightly hesitant performance, slightly quiet, slightly underplayed. In the next year, I think in my final year performance, I realized that I couldn't act any other way then. Every time playing a completely different character, but I got so used to playing this thing or this type of character that I found it really difficult to get out of it. Now that sounds like a dreadful anecdote and I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry for the listeners. But my point is that, so Nicole Kidman did this sort of breathless performance in Moulin Rouge a few years before this, and it feels like she can't get out of it.
Yeah,
that's the point there. She did this breathy thing in Moulin Rouge because she was dying of consumption, and she does exactly the same thing in this movie, where as far as I can make out, she isn't dying of consumption.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Sorry, listeners.
Was it just her attempt at being evil, though, and that's how it comes across?
Yeah, but she didn't really succeed at that either, did she?
No.
You see, my argument would be that you've got Eva Green playing the witch with a silly name, and you've got Nicole Kidman playing the awful Mrs. Coulter. I'd have just swapped them over.
Yeah.
So you've got Nicole Kidman as a slightly breathy, witchy thing floating around, and then you've got the dark-haired Eva Green who could definitely do evil. I just miscast. And however, how good was it to see our man Christopher Lee in action?
I had no idea he was in this film, so it was really cool to see him. It's probably the only good thing.
I'd forgotten he was in it. It's interesting. I think his name at the end comes up like third or fourth on the credits. He's only got one line.
Yeah. It's also a weird sort of reunion for him and Ian McKellen too.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And that's another thing. Okay, I'm going to rant a bit now. And I'll let you speak shortly. But Ian McKellen as the bear, Yorick Bernerson, not convinced that worked either.
No. It felt like this guy, we know he can deliver lines as Gandalf. Let's get him to look like a bear and do the same thing.
Yeah.
But then the lines just went there. Wasn't great.
Yeah.
I did expect him sometimes to be like, Frodo.
Fool of a took.
Oops, wrong film.
You kind of just sort of expected that to come out at some point. It was like, why is Gandalf...
Fool of a pan.
why is Gandalf a polar bear? I don't understand. And the one thing I will say is when the movie started, and I felt this way when I first watched it, I thought the girl playing Lyra wasn't very good. But as the film progressed, I actually ended up thinking, you know what? She turns in a pretty good performance.
I think I disagree.
Interesting.
I've got nothing against her, but she didn't bring the character to life as much as I thought. And I have seen like the series that's been made since, and I think she does a better job than Dakota in the film, and it just didn't work for me. I think she tried sometimes. But again, I just think it was really wooden and empty. It was lifeless.
Maybe a bit, but the bit at the end was when, the bit I remember is when they get into the experimental station or whatever, and you kind of realise she's carrying the whole film. And if you're 11 or 12 years old, to have carried the whole film that far, and it's a pretty weighty film. So yeah, kudos to her. But I agree, I mean, it's hardly an Oscar-winning performance, is it?
Yeah.
Although, to jump ahead to a bit we normally do, this movie did win an Oscar. Would you like to know what for?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I think I do know this, actually. Yeah.
Go on.
Oh, bear with. It's one of my trivia. It was Oscar for Best Visual Effects.
It was, yeah.
But apparently there was huge upset because it should have been Transformers, apparently. Although Transformers came out the same year, so people were upset that Transformers didn't win. Transformers has far better CGI.
Oh, much better. It is. It's funny, I hadn't made that connection, but when we did the Transformers podcast in the last season, I remember saying this is like 17 or 18-year-old CGI that is still as good today as it was then. It's absolutely seamless. Yeah. So, yeah, I think you're probably right. Definitely, there were some bits in where you could see the CGI join, particularly when she's riding the polar bear across the snow.
Yeah, and there was another scene where she was stood with the polar bears and they were fighting, and you could just see that she wasn't there.
Yeah.
Well, she was there, but they weren't.
There were, I suppose there were bits of the CGI that were pretty good. I think the CGI that's good is when it's a background, it's a setting. So like Oxford College with the airship in the background. Nobody's really interacting with that. It's when things start interacting with each other that you can start to see the join.
I think we've said that before. Yeah,
yeah. I always found for these movies of a certain age, and this is also true if you go back and watch Lord of the Rings again, when they have CGI'd human movement, you can totally tell the difference.
Yeah. I've just remembered that bit in Star Wars. It's not a good comparison at all, but it's where Han has to walk over the tail of a CGI Jabba the Hutt who wasn't there originally, so it just sort of moves in a weird way.
Yeah, it just sort of bounces.
Feels like
up.
That.
Yeah. Because the original Jabba Hutt was just a bloke with a moustache, wasn't it? And then they changed it and had to change that scene to catch up with themselves.
Yeah.
Interesting. Any other performances of note from the cast, do you think? Or otherwise?
Well, this is again just me comparing the show to the movie, but Sam Elliott was an interesting choice, I think, for that role. I think it's a good role for him, but in that kind of film, I didn't really expect to see him.
Yeah,
it's kind of bizarre.
Also, criminally underused in the movie as well.
Well, yeah, true. I mean, absolutely.
I mean, it's quite an important character in the book. And just criminally underused, because actually he's, in fact, I would say if you take away the I don't know how you describe it, the lead cast, Kidman, Craig, Dakota Blue thingy, the supporting cast actually does a better job.
Yeah, you know, I think I'd agree with that.
You know,
yeah.
You know, you've got Derek Jacobi, Christopher Lee, and there's a couple of sort of actors that you and I have probably seen on the telly in certain things because they're sort of classic British actors, and they do a really, really good job with material that, you're right, Chris Weiss decided it wasn't really his. It wasn't the box office flop that I thought it was. I thought it was one of those.
Oh, really?
I thought it was one of those ones that had bombed and made no money at all. It had a budget of 180 million and made 372. So effectively doubled
its
doubled its budget. And I think it probably did better outside of the United States of America, where the book is a bit less known.
True, yeah.
But yeah, interesting. I wonder why they didn't decide to carry on with making sequels.
I was just thinking that, yeah. It would have been more interesting to see it flop after the sequel.
Right.
As opposed to the first one, especially earning that much money. It's not a competition. Yeah.
I know what you mean. It seemed really weird that at the time they were going to make all these sequels and it was going to be another kind of franchise. And it just didn't happen. I think they just decided that, we're not going to make it. Do you think that by this time there was a kind of fantasy movie fatigue?
Possibly, yeah. That does happen quite a lot with these sort of things. I wouldn't be surprised if it did. But also at the same time, it didn't really land in a sense that you could either have fatigue or not have fatigue. It just didn't land as a film.
No, it didn't. And I think that's...
I mean, I was a kid back then, so what would I really know?
No, but I think even you knew at the time it was quite boring.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not boring. I think it's perfectly entertaining, but that it just wasn't very good.
Yeah, I do remember getting to the end of the film and thinking, was that it? Like,
yeah.
Where's the rest of it?
Well, that's the other thing it does. It kind of does the, okay, there's clearly going to be a sequel. So there's going to be, it does that Lord of the Rings thing. You get to the end of the Fellowship and imagine that they hadn't then made The Two Towers and The Return of the King. And you'd go, oh, okay, that's it. That can't be the end. They've gone that way, and Boromir's dead. That can't be it. and did they ever find the orcs that they're hunting? But they absolutely butchered the end of the book, I have to say. There's so much more that happens in the book after the film has ended.
I think for me as well is like, the reason it felt lifeless was because a lot of it seemed to be missing. There were big chunks of it that just disappeared. I think sort of certain scenes, and I know it sounds ridiculous in a film, but you could tell, like, in any other sort of media, a book, TV show, that sort of thing, there would be days and days worth of travel, but the next thing you know, they're at the next location fighting the next thing.
Yeah.
Actually, one of the good examples I can think of this was when Lyra was trying to convince Yorick to go and get his armor. It felt like the scene was, okay, that's the end of the conversation, and then she went, oh, I know what to do, went back to him, do this. Whereas I think in any other media, it would have been, I need to come up with a plan of how to do it, I'll go back the next day and tell him. And it just felt like it was just jumping to the next bit after the next bit.
Yeah.
I explained that badly.
No, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, in fact, I when I was watching the movie, I thought exactly that. I'll go along, will you come with me? No. Okay, but what about if I say this? Okay, then I'll be by your side forever. Hang on.
Can you imagine if the Hobbits made it to Rivendell and they said, right, go take the ring. Like, okay, but what about talking about it? How are we going to figure it out? No, just go take
just
it.
Just go take it. And then,
you know what I mean?
And the next thing you know, they're in Mordor.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we got here. How did that happen? Well,
the Spiderwick maneuver.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is a bit like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Perhaps not quite as bad as Spiderwick, where as far as we can make out, all of that action takes place in about 4 hours. For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, you should go and listen to our Spiderwick episode. I didn't know we had a thing, the Spiderwick maneuver. That's genius that you've invented that.
I like it, yeah.
That's going to have to go on a T-shirt now.
It's like... The Spiderwick maneuver would be, oh, it's Monday. Well, now it's Friday. That's how I want to deal with every week, maneuver.
If only you could have the Spiderwick maneuver in real life.
Yeah.
So you have a thing that you have a thing. You don't particularly want to do it. So you invoke the Spiderwick maneuver and you get to the end and it's fine because everybody lived happily ever after.
Yeah, it happened 4 hours.
And I even had time to pop and do some groceries. Nobody will ever know. I also alluded to this soundtrack. Alexandre Desplat, the composer of my second ever favorite movie soundtrack. And in this, utterly unmemorable.
See, I think. Sorry, did you have the rest of a point then?
No, that was the point. I just didn't get any. You know, when you watch a movie like this, and now I'm going to make a point that I didn't need to make. Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, King Kong. The music is impactful. It's doing something in the movie, and that's a really obvious thing to say. I barely remember any refrain or theme from this movie.
Yeah, I'm the same. But I will say I think the music was my only positive of this film. But in the sense that it worked perfectly for something that wasn't this film. So there was little bits and pieces of music dotted all over the place that I was like, that would work really well in this thing or that thing, just not this.
Yeah.
And I think he did a great job of the music and I really liked it, but you can't remember what it was.
I might revisit the music.
And also it should have been somewhere else.
Yeah, I might revisit the music because maybe I've missed a thing. At the end as well, you got the song that comes on. It's by Kate Bush and it's called Lyra. And you think exactly. So again, you're like, all right, so you're making the picture by numbers, okay? So Lord of the Rings, that's been successful. They had Annie Lennox, they had Enya, and whatever. I can't actually remember the other one in the middle is. Might be Neil.
It's Gollum's song. Can't remember the.
Is it Neil Finn? Is it? Anyway, so you've got this singer that does a song at the end that they've composed, and I love Kate Bush. I think Kate Bush is amazing. But that is not a particularly good song when you've just got someone wailing the word Lyra over and over again. Sorry, Kate, because I love you to death, but not a great song either.
I didn't get to hear it because I was doing the 10-second skip, so all I got was, that was it.
But again, I feel like it's another one that I should revisit because I think sometimes you watch movies where you just think, okay, I like the soundtrack, I'll go back and listen to that. But I didn't really care for the music. Oh, sorry, for the movie. And the music was the sort of best thing in it, really. You must have, for this movie, many Sam's out-of-pocket takes and or trivia.
I think if I had to have an out-of-pocket take, I would say it purposely failed because it was never going to work.
I'm fine
with that.
It's also possibly true.
One of the bits of trivia about Sam Elliott actually is that he hadn't read any of the books before he was asked to take the role. He did, however, choose to read the books first and then read the script. But I feel like you'd be so disappointed by the script at that point.
Yeah.
But he tried. He did it the right way in the end. The golden monkey apparently was the hardest demon to make because he had to move around and jump all the time. So I just don't understand how that won for best visual effects if they couldn't get a monkey to work, CGI-wise. There you go. Not an interesting bit of trivia, to be honest.
But I thought I was going to make a point about the demons. This is a good point to make it. I don't think it's particularly well explained in the movie.
No.
In the book, you kind of get it. You get that it's the... And they do explain this to me, but it's the soul, it's a dialogue, it's your internal dialogue that you have with yourself, and this is just outside of the body and everything else. But like, I don't know how well that concept, which is fairly heavy and sort of meaningful, translated to film. I didn't get a real sense of how successful that was. I was going to also say about the golden monkey that was still very difficult in 2007. And they didn't get it right, did they?
No. Maybe we should give them the benefit of the doubt for that one.
Yeah.
I will say, though, interestingly enough, I remembered that after we'd seen this film, I'm sure I carried around in like a teddy bear or something small saying that it was my demon. I do remember that. So it did have some sort of impact, and I did kind of understand it.
I did that with a thing when I read the book, and I was a grown-up.
Oh, okay.
I was a grown-up person. I carried a little teddy, in my pocket for about 3 weeks afterwards and would talk to it. I thought it might help to be able to sort of verbalise your internal monologue, but in the end I was just talking to a teddy in my pocket, so I stopped doing it. There was a video game with the Golden Compass, which I don't think we ever got, did we? I don't know.
No, I don't think we did, but I did think that there would be, yeah. It seemed like that kind of thing.
And I do remember as well, before the movie came out, there was an awful lot of merchandise. And we bought a making of the movie book or something. There was something, and we were looking at all the visuals in it. Because I was actually excited for this movie. I had read the book. Yeah. I'd read the whole trilogy. I think it's fantastic. And I was looking at the video and I was getting so excited for the movie. I still didn't see Nicole Kidman as Mrs. Coulter because in the book she's got dark hair. Yeah.
And
in fact, the Philip Pullman said that he, after the film came out, he said he was prepared to admit that he got it wrong. Mrs. Coulter did have blonde hair after all. Well, that was quite a nice compliment to.
Yeah.
But not in the BBC remake where she goes back to being dark haired.
I noticed that actually, yeah.
There was one more piece of trivia, I think.
Two more. If you want.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
This one we've kind of touched upon already. Apparently some really important scenes, which you probably know, taken from the final chapters of the book, were filmed, but they were deleted before release. And apparently New Line Cinema hoped to put it in a sequel. But how does that work? You can't just film something from a different scene and put it in the next one.
Interesting. Yeah.
Maybe sometimes it does work, but I don't think it would have in this instance.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that. I know that there was I think one of the things I read was the actual book itself ends not particularly positive, doesn't have a happy ending particularly, and New Line were very, very against that, and so they said, you know, you need to go away and kind of remove the ending from the original cut, but they never did. And they also kind of cut out loads of things, I think I read as well, to get it down to under 2 hours, but they felt it was too long. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I've just made a connection with my last bit of trivia here, which is quite funny.
Go on.
It says Sam Elliott proclaimed that this was by far the most exciting CGI movie in which he has been involved, but it's got to be because technically you have to include 2003's Hulk.
Of course, yeah. Yeah. Which is perhaps not the most technically sound movie, is it? I quite like that. There was one thing that bothered me at the time, and it's one of those things that popped up when you sort of go, I'll do some research on the movie, and this one pops up, and it popped up. Uh-huh. It popped up after I'd acknowledged it as I was watching the movie. You know, at the end when they're in the intercision machine.
Yeah.
Okay, and you've got Pantalaimon, the demon that can change his form, and he's crawling around. I think it's, I don't know what the animal is, it's a mink or a pine marten or something, but we've already seen him change into a butterfly. Just butterfly out. just turn into an ant. Turn into an ant and that's crawl true. out. If they can change, there must be some rule in there that's not written anywhere, which is basically they can change their shape but only to a certain thing or an idea, because there's other bits where if Lyra's in danger, why not just why doesn't Pan the demon just turn into a massive polar bear or anything? I mean, you know, I've got to walk all this way, or I could turn into a bird and carry you, or I could be a horse and you could ride me or whatever. And so I just thought that I don't know if that's it's a kind of a visual plot hole that in the book you wouldn't necessarily make that connection, would you?
No.
So I thought that was a bit of a goof, I think that's what they call it in technical terms.
I found this film hard to watch for two reasons.
Okay, what were the two reasons?
The first one was I couldn't really find it anywhere. So I usually buy everything that I watch on YouTube, so I've got a bit of a collection, but it wasn't there. And it wasn't on any streaming services other than Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
And when I went on Prime, you have to jump through so many hoops just to watch it. So it took me ages to actually get it to work, but I did. But yeah, it just took forever.
I would usually use a streaming service. YouTube is the best one because the movies, you just search for them and they pop up and you pay a couple of pounds or whatever and they come up. Obviously, it's not on YouTube. I thought it might be on Netflix, hidden somewhere on Netflix, and it isn't. So I too found it on Prime and paid a small amount of money to stream it. Which I rented it. I didn't want to buy it. I didn't think it was a keeper. So I did that thing where you can rent it for 30 days.
Funny enough, I did as well. But only because I'd rather keep my collection on YouTube, not start a collection somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Funny anecdote, actually, about that.
Go on.
Not interesting at all. A few years back, they made Deadpool 2 as sort of like a cut-down PG-13 rating, which isn't available anymore, and it's really hard to track down. But I bought that on Amazon Prime, so I actually have a copy of it.
Wow, that's cool. There's a really funny version of, I can't remember whether it's Shaun of the Dead or Hot Fuzz, where they do like a 20-minute version, and it was the one that they made for television. So what they basically, and actually it's not genuine, it's a Mickey take. I think it appeared actually originally on the DVD extras. But they do that thing where they've quite clearly said an inappropriate word, and they dub it over with something else. So you sort of get you can see what the mouth says, and the voice says, "Oh, you smoother father," and things like that.
I really like the one in Die Hard 2 where it says "Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon."
I love those. I might go down a rabbit hole on the internet later and watch some of those things. I love them. So is anything else you think we need to say about the Golden Compass? We've acknowledged all the bits we would normally acknowledge.
We have, yeah, interestingly enough. There's nothing else I want to say other than sort of my final thoughts, I guess.
Okay, so
which has already been said, to be honest.
I think most people can guess, but actually, I think my summary might slightly disagree with some of the stuff that I've said. Okay. I think it's my turn to go first because I chose the movie, right?
It is, yeah.
So I gave it a 2 from memory because I think at the time I was deeply disappointed by something that I was expecting. And by all of the things I'd seen in the build-up, I was expecting to actually be really, really good. And I had a high level of anticipation for it. On the rewatch, I think it has some charm. I think there is something about the movie that isn't as bad as I remember it being. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel particularly long or slow. I thought that some of the characters from the book were criminally underused. Serafina, in the movie they call her Serafina Pekala. In my head I always call her Serafina Pekala. Scoresby was massively underused. And the bits which could be quite dull, the kind of talky bits at Jordan College and with the Magisterium, they were handled pretty well. There wasn't a great deal of exposition. But it remains, I think, a bit of a disappointment. Nevertheless, I'm going to be quite generous with my score because I think watching it again, I'd like to have seen a sequel. And I think that's if a movie leaves you wanting more, then it's probably done something well. So I'm going to go up to 6 out of 10 for this movie.
Wow. Okay.
So it's just kind of top half, you know, it just pushes itself over the kind of half marks there. What about you?
Well, I've got a lot of thoughts about it, I think. I think I'll agree with what you said about the sort of... pacing's not the right word, so maybe timing, I would say. Which sounds like you said a different thing, but you didn't. I don't think it felt long. I don't think it dragged... Well, maybe it dragged in a few places, but it didn't feel like it wasn't getting anywhere lengthwise for me. But that being said, I didn't really enjoy it at all. I think there's definitely better things out there. It's like a terrible review. I just couldn't really get into it. But also I could at the same time, but it just didn't work for me. So based on the fact that the score that I'm going to give is, would I watch it again? I'm actually going to give it a 0 out of 10. I don't have any intention of ever seeing it again.
Wow. Do you know that's our first benefit of hindsight 0?
I think it is, or at least definitely me.
Wow.
But yeah.
No, that's...
Saying out loud, I don't think I've got anything terrible against it. I just don't think I'll ever see it again. I just wouldn't want to.
Yeah, I can't think of a good reason to watch it again. Not least because I haven't seen all of the BBC thing, and I'd like to go. Right. I'd like now to go and watch that because I have a feeling that was much better received and done a better job. The thing that it lacks, I can't change my score now, and I want to, but it's too late. I can't. Oh. I think the thing that it lacks is you simply don't care.
Yeah.
So they're doing this incredibly evil thing, which is separating children from their souls for undefinable reasons, which are explained in the book but not in the movie. It doesn't seem particularly evil. They've managed to break the machine really quickly. There's a bit of a punch up at the end with Egyptians, and that's the end of the movie. And you think, okay. All right, brilliant. But that was the bit that I thought, if there'd been a sequel, I would probably have gone and watched it. So yeah, I'm going to go with a six.
Yeah, true.
But I think, I was going to say, as always, I think we kind of find the level by, if you aggregate our score, I've been massively generous. You've perhaps been a bit harsh. But overall, if you said this movie was a 3 out of 10, you wouldn't disagree, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You've just reminded me, though, I'm pretty sure, from my knowledge, Billy Costa dies anyway, but he didn't in the film.
No, he does
sort of
die.
Glossed
yeah.
over that.
And they were, again, I hesitate to criticise any young actor. I hesitate to do it because I couldn't do what they're doing and I never got the opportunity to do it. But they weren't great, were they, let's be honest?
No, sorry.
So although I hesitate to criticise, I have just criticised. Freddie Highmore was decent as the voice of Pantalaimon.
Yeah, but I would have liked to have seen him play an actual not an actual character, but a physical child there. Yeah.
How can you have in your movie all of these people, the people doing the voices? You've got Christian Scott Thomas, Kathy Bates, Freddie Highmore, Ian McKellen. How can you have these really good actors doing all the voices, either massively underuse them or not be interesting?
Yeah,
and the only character that was interesting was the witch Serafina Pacala, and she's not even in it.
Barely. Yeah,
you know that name comes. One of my criticisms of when I was reading the Northern Lights books was the names. I always felt the names were just sort of really a bit forced. Lyra Balakwa, yeah. Lord Azrael, Serafina Pacala. I always thought the names were a bit forced. Apparently the name Serafina Pacala came from Philip Pullman looking through a Finnish telephone book.
Yeah, I saw that.
I thought it was quite interesting.
I guess that works. Yeah.
I'm sensitive to names, though, because, you know, I've read Lord of the Rings on more than one occasion, and that's like a real challenge to get your head around who's called what and how and why. But I always feel the name, I always feel, because those names have a kind of basis in the languages that Tolkien had invented, they feel super authentic.
Yeah, I'll agree with that, yeah.
In fact, I would say the only names in the whole of the Lord of the Rings books that never felt fully authentic were the Hobbit names, particularly Frodo and Bilbo.
Yeah.
But that anyway, that's even Baggins of Bag End and things like that. It's really well thought out and they all mean something, you know, and but anyway.
Doesn't work for everyone.
It doesn't. But if you haven't read the Northern Lights books, listeners and folks, they are definitely better than the movie.
Yeah.
And I love the, I think it's the second one. I think it's the subtle knife. Where they can cut through the universes and move between each one. I love that. It's a really good book.
I haven't read the books, but I like the idea of the subtle knife, to be honest. It's quite cool.
Definitely worth reading. Yeah, you cut through and whatever. Yeah, really, really good. We need to choose next week's film, and it is, in fact, your turn.
It is my turn. Yay. Woo! Don't get too excited.
No, I'm very excited.
I've decided... This is a film that I've wanted to put on the podcast for a while, but every time it's my turn, I keep forgetting about it.
Okay.
So I'm going to go for a different... No, I'm going to go for this film. And just to put this in perspective, my memory score for The Golden Compass was a 3, but the Golden... And then I gave it a 0, but The Golden Compass on IMDb, shout out, is 6.1.
Yeah.
In perspective. The film that I'm about to choose is a lower rating. I don't want to say what it is, but it is a lower rating than... The Golden Compass.
Okay.
So I'm curious to see if I'll go a different direction with the score.
All right.
So it's a movie that I think we definitely saw at the cinema. Think isn't a very good word in that. It's one that I want to revisit. I should just get into it, really.
Yeah, I'm waiting.
It's the 2002 Scooby-Doo.
Okay. All right.
The live-action one.
Live-action one. Okay.
Yeah, and... The reason why I've chosen it is because I think it works as a kid's film, but as an adult, there's a lot of things in it that you would miss as a kid.
Yeah.
Because it's written by, one of the writers is James Gunn.
Okay.
So I'm quite curious to go back to it and see what it's actually like as an adult.
There was quite a lot of these, there were quite a few of these, there was a few sequels to these movies as well, wasn't there? There was a reasonably successful run of films. Yeah. I vaguely remember this movie. I'm trying to remember who's in the cast. You've got Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yep, Freddie Prinze Jr. They're married as well, yeah.
Yeah.
In real life. Matthew Lillard.
Yeah, that's right, as Shaggy. And who plays Velma?
Linda Cardellini.
Linda Cardellini, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. And it's just the... Anyway, I was going to say, it's just the one with... I'm sure there's one with Isla Fisher and Rowan Atkinson. I don't know if it's this one.
It is this one, yeah. I didn't know it was Isla Fisher, I'm going to be honest, until I just looked at it, but yeah. Yeah,
I think because she had famously been in Home and Away, hadn't she? And had done that thing where they move off to Hollywood. There'd been a couple of actors that had done that. Guy Pearce, probably most famously, because he actually went on to make some quite good films, having started in, I think, Neighbours or whatever. Okay, yeah. Like Russell Crowe, he was in Neighbours as well. Do you know that?
Oh, I didn't know that, actually,
yeah,
no.
So he had a brief appearance in Neighbours, yeah. There you go. Okay. Right. Your score for memory and why? Because your turn. You go first.
Yeah. I think I'm going to give this... I kind of want to give it a 5 out of 10, just to be right in the middle and be a bit annoying. Because I do remember enjoying it as a kid, but I'm also looking forward to seeing it as an adult. But I also think I prefer the sequel to this one. So I think 5 is probably a decent... Yeah, I'll put it on and watch it kind of score. And I also like it kind of score. So 5.
I would give it a 5. As you have done. I seem to remember quite enjoying it as a kind of, you know, throwaway Saturday afternoon, whatever movie.
Yeah.
I think I seem to remember quite enjoying it. And I also remember thinking that the people that had nailed, who were in it, had nailed their version of the cartoon characters.
Yeah.
Particularly, I think, was it Matthew Lillard, you said, playing Shaggy? He was great. Yeah. Fred and Daphne were equally irritating. and things like that. So I would give it a 5, but it gets a 6 because anything with Linda Cardellini in it gets a bonus point.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. Can I change my to 6 too?
so it gets a bonus point because Linda Cardellini's in it. So there we go. Yeah. I'll give it a 6. Actually, I was going to say that. I've just to jump back to the Golden Compass. I was going to make that point, and I've borrowed it for something else. Anything with Eva Green gets a bonus because Eva Green's in it.
I thought you were going to say Nicole Kidman.
Well, yeah, no, I just found her deeply irritating in the movie.
Yeah.
But anything with Eva Green and immediately gets an extra point. So there you go. So we call it the Cardellini maneuver. It gets an extra point just for that. So there you go. All right.
Nice.
So you gave it 5, I gave it 6, yeah?
Well, I'm changing my to a 6 now as well because of Linda Cardellini.
Okay, the Cardellini manoeuvre. Okay. So we've invented 2 manoeuvres.
We have, yeah.
I wonder how many of our listeners would prefer to do the Spiderwick manoeuvre during our podcast. So it starts and then it just finishes.
But then no one would listen to the best bit, which is just us talking.
Exactly that. I actually do like the fact that we've invented the Cardellini manoeuvre. Because we can, let's remember that, because we can use that for any time we want to give a movie a bonus score.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right, well, I'm very much looking forward to going away and watch Scooby-Doo. I think that one might also be on the Amazon Prime, which might be helpful. I think I saw it pop up the other day. Anyway, we will find it.
Yeah,
we will watch it. So thank you very much for listening to our podcast again. Thank you very much for all of the people that keep emailing. I should say we've had quite a lot of email questions, and I just wonder if we might pause the questions and just maybe kind of do a catch up at the end where we did before, because we got a lot of feedback from people enjoying our question and answers. I don't know, maybe I'm just saying that now. I might not do it next week and sort of put a pause on the questions and then come back and revisit them all in a different episode. But it's good to be back, I have to say, after a shaky Christmas period where we sort of came back on and disappeared and things. Good to be back, and I hope people are enjoying us being back too. We should do what day it is today. Is there anything special about today? Pop up on your computer?
Yes, actually, funny enough.
Wow.
Did that sound too false?
Yeah, but do carry on.
Okay. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's not what I had, but wow. Happy birthday, Martin. Martin Luther King Jr. How old would he have been?
At least 10.
Yeah, easily 10. Actually, I've just Googled it, and I can confirm that you're correct. He was born in 1929, So conceivably, he could still have been alive had it not otherwise ended quite badly for him. But conceivably, he could still be alive. Just other famous people's birthdays. Claudia Winkleman.
Oh, she's on the telly tonight.
She is on the telly. Eric Dyer, footballer.
Oh.
That's pretty. It is also the National Korean Language Day, but, controversially, only in North Korea.
Wow.
So there you go. So if you are in North Korea and you're listening to the podcast, happy Language Day. I don't speak your language, but I'm sure it's a lovely one, and I hope you're enjoying it.
Do you want to hear my joke?
Yeah, go on then.
Okay. Have you heard about that really famous film, the Fruit and Veg Shop?
No.
Oh, I'm surprised you haven't heard of it. Do you know it's the highest grocery in film? I think I ruined it, but you get the idea.
I do get the idea. You know, when I was saying, every time now I say the words bear with me.
Yeah.
Right. If I'd been the script writer of The Golden Compass, I'd have put that in somewhere.
Yeah.
I'd have put that in. Lyra, where are you? Just 1 second. Bear with me. Cut to Yorick. Back. Okay, I'm here now. Do you know? Can I just? I want to add a Golden Compass thing. And okay. I should have said it before. And I know we're done with the podcast and people probably want to kill us. But the alethiometer. Uh-huh. It's very badly explained in the movie.
Yeah.
It's like it tells you the answer. It can only tell the truth. Okay, what's it telling you? Oh, nobody knows how to read it. Lyra. I can read that. Yeah, go that way. It's like, come on. Make it a challenge at least.
I really hated the fact that it went to this weird sort of dusty cutscene every time.
Yeah. Dust.
Like a video game.
Like, yeah, so it goes to dust and then you have to kind of, oh, I've seen this, I've seen that, I've seen that. And then Lyra says, yeah, X, Y, Z. I find that quite frustrating. I'm going to go and read the book again. I'm immediately going to start reading the book today. So I can rid myself of the movie. However, as often happens when you see a movie and then you read the book, just for clarity, Eva Green will be playing Serafina Bacala in the book.
Nice, fair enough.
And I think on that noteworthy bombshell, we can end. So all that remains is for me to say goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bear with me. Yorick. I would have so put that joke in the movie.
Of hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?